from the heart of the Forest City, this is the Craig Needles Podcast, brought to you by Lexus of London. Now here's your host, Craig Needles.
The Craig Needles Podcast and the Friday Roundtable here at ClassicRock981.com, LondonNewsToday.ca, and on your favorite podcast app. We are, of course, brought to you by our friends over at Lexus of London, and I'm thrilled to be joined on the Friday Roundtable today here in studio by political insiders Ryan Goss and Shobhita Sharma, as well as former candidate and former school board trustee and potentially future school board trustee Matthew Reed. Thank you for being here, everybody. Appreciate the time.
Thanks for having us.
Hello.
So some news broke today, kind of, depending on where you are on the internet. We may have a second councillor running for mayor. We found out today via the back pages of his website that are not necessarily public facing, but hey, every now and then I get clever and find out some stuff, that Councillor Michael Van Holst is running for mayor. And perhaps to the shock of no one, it appears as though his platform will be mostly vaccination based, or anti-vaccination based, if you want to call it that, or at least anti-vaccination mandate. I've got concerns about this. Look, anyone who wants to run for mayor can run. But if we get a mayor's race where vaccination is the key topic, that's going to be, I think, disappointing for the city. What do you all think of the news that we got today?
So I think most people would think, because I'm the chair of the London Public Health Unit, that I would be all for talking about, you know, this type of thing. But honestly, when you talk to people in the public, they're ready to move on. This is not an issue. Provincially and federally, the mandates are dropping. There's only, you know, one little mandate left that I'd love Ryan to help me fix at Pearson Airport. And after that, you know, this is really not an issue. So when you think of all of the, you know, problems that are facing the city, why not actually talk about an issue the city has a bit of control in? Because really, even when the city was talking about bylaws with masks, it was really only for, you know, city venues and things, and it really would touch so few people. You know, obviously a more wider mandate from the provincial or federal governments would have far more, you know, reaching, you know, implications for people and their lives. So, you know, you have Van Holst, who has a solid base because he is the only councillor who has been actively against vaccines and masking, and, you know, continues to try to bring up this, you know, no pun intended, but dead issue. And he continues to try and push this, and he's trying to rile up his base in order to get them to come out. And, you know, we have to recognize that every election we've seen the last couple of years, there is about 8 to 10% of votes who are going to these fringe parties that really are only focused on these same issues. So, you know, I just worry that we're going to continue to be talking about this in 5 or 10 years when we should be way past it.
So for me, it's not even just the vaccines that the issue is here. It's not about running on a platform that's against vaccines. It's about the fact that the councillor was at a rally that was not only attended by anti-vaxxers, but also by people that the city is actively working to solve issues, well, against. So we cannot be a city that talks about anti-racism and anti-oppression and then also see a candidate who's running to be the mayor of the city, who's been to rallies that quite frankly saw people come out carrying swastika flags, essentially.
Yeah,
so
well,
that's not cool.
When I was at that particular rally, I personally witnessed the Confederate flag. I don't know if I saw any swastikas in London, there were lots in Ottawa,
yeah.
So the point still makes sense. But yeah. I personally witnessed Confederate flags being there, which also, not a good look.
Yeah. So where I get in on all this is, as you all know, if you've listened to me before, I'm all about declaring conflict of interest. And I have one here. I pledged my support to a municipal campaign, and I'm not going to, you know, talk too much about the fact of, you know, Michael's posts or, you know, whether what he's doing is actually legal under the, you know, the Ontario Municipal Elections Act. That's a conversation for other people. But I will say that what bothers me the most is when I read that post this morning is the the anti-vaccine mentality. That really bothers me. You don't want to wear a mask, it's your choice now, right? You don't want to do certain things, that's fine. But it's this whole creating that anti-vaccine mentality and continue that conversation, which proves to be a very, very, very divisive and very hostile one. And I'm talking from experience, working in a federal member of parliament's office, the vitriol that has come the way of our staff, of the member of parliament, of all elected officials, has been grotesque. We've had threats to the member's safety, to his family's safety. I've had people talking about my children. I've had staff who have been berated, have been stalked on social media over this. It's been absolutely disgusting. But forget about the COVID vaccine for a second. What a lot of people don't forget to think about is that this also calls into question other vaccines that we need as a society to keep ourselves and our children and our vulnerable populations safe. And when we keep talking about the vaccine, when he brought up in his post about his neighbor who had his shaking hands after his second dose, I'm sorry, Mr. Van Holst, you're not a medical doctor. You're not like, I don't want to hear your thoughts on this. I read an article, I'm not sure if it was actually by this outlet, Craig, or not, but this has not been a claim that's been tested or validated by a medical doctor.
I specifically put that in the piece that we wrote. Yes,
that's what really frustrates me. Like, if you're a politician, you're not a doctor, right? He doesn't have Health Canada behind him. He doesn't have the Ontario Public Health system behind him, the City of London. He's not talking to the City of London doctor. He's just Michael Van Holst out there spewing innuendos and suggesting things. That is what really bothers me, because it's bringing us back to that very divisive matter about vaccine mandates. And vaccines are important, and I think it's something that, to what Matt said, we need to start moving on and looking at the future and how we deal with this. But we also need to be encouraging people to get vaccinated for not only COVID, but for other diseases that we've pretty much eradicated that we're seeing come back.
And I think of what are the issues that are facing the city right now? And you have a mayor who actually
housing,
can
climate.
Deal with these things, right? So 4 years ago, the biggest issue, which was the bane of my existence, was BRT. But bus rapid transit was actually an issue that the city had control over. Vaccine mandates, it's such a like Donald Trump kind of tactic to be saying like you're going to fix something and it's completely out of your control and you're just going to ignore all of the actual issues that the city is facing and can actually do something about in order to rile up, you know, a base that, you know, is still kind of clinging on to the last couple years. And we need to be dealing with housing and affordability. We need to be dealing with, you know, actually having a vision. And this is what I wish every mayor and councillor, because it isn't just the mayor who needs to have a vision for the city, but we need to be electing people who can do good governance, but also have a vision for where they want the city to be in the next 10, 20 years, instead of where we are in the last two.
And what worries me is that this rhetoric and attaching it to the word freedom, somehow it dilutes that exact conversation where people are now chasing squirrels. People are now suddenly talking about anti-vaccine mandates when, to Ryan's point, there are no mandates.
Look
right
at now. The federal conservative leadership race where Pierre Poilievre comes out and says, if I'm prime minister, no more vaccine mandates ever again. And he wasn't very specific there. So
everyone
talking
about,
we're talking polio?
Yeah.
What are we talking about?
Are we talking about measles, mumps, rubella? Yeah. Are we talking polio? Yeah. Like, there was no specifics. So, like, how are we to know? So, it's courting a dangerous base, and it's kind of scary stuff, and it's upsetting stuff.
Yeah. But to that point, Pierre Poilievre says this, and, you know, I'm sorry, he has no jurisdiction to talk about the pupil, vaccination requirements in Ontario. So, you know, you have people who might listen to that and think, great, my kid's not going to be forced to have MMR and polio and all these other things. He has absolutely no power to do this. And, when I said it's a Donald Trump tactic, it's because they'll say whatever their base wants without any actual ability to back it up or do anything about it. And I think that is so, like, you know, such a smokescreen, and it's so why people, you know, lose so much faith in politicians.
But it unfortunately trickles down to the municipal level, and then we have conversations like this instead of having conversations about how we can make the city more affordable, how we can get people more housing, how we can work on making the city actually livable for people, more livable for people.
It's just a distraction. I guess that's exactly what frustrates me is that, you know, you talk about, Matt kind of alluded to this right off the top, like everyone's tired. People are moving on. They're trying to find a way to live with COVID. If we have, you know, if we have another wave in the fall, how we deal with that. But people are looking to like, how can I live a normal-ish life, and how can I keep my family safe? And, you know, let's start talking about these other issues like cost of living. Mm-hmm. Like people are like, with the way that inflation is going right now, it's hard to, you know, pay your mortgage and put food on the table. We need to look at how the affordability of a house in London, like the people in this room, like I know both of you. So like we have homes, right? We were lucky. We got into the market at the right time, but like friends of ours that aren't in, they're not getting into the market. Like they can't afford a home. Right. No. So this is frustrating. Like these are the issues, you know, we have a climate that's basically on fire. And you know, again, I always hate to say, well, you know, climate change is such a big issue. Canada and London can't do anything. That's a cop out. Everyone has something to do. Everyone has a role to play. Everyone has to contribute to, making smart choices to bring down our emissions. But we're getting away from very important issues that matter to people's lives and that affect them every day. And we're talking about dog whistle politics, mm-hmm. that just, it frankly is exhausting, mm-hmm. and it's combative and it pits people against each other. And like we need to be better than that as a city. Otherwise, we're just going to be on this merry-go-round of round and round and round we go. What are we actually accomplishing?
But
I was just, you finish your point, Matt, and then I'll say what I'm gonna
say. I was just going to say, I think part of the problem, though, has been how divisive politics has become over the years. And to the fact that, you know, you don't have, gosh, I remember growing up and you'd see like how Pierre Elliott Trudeau, even though he was, this very dynamic, relationship with the leader of the opposition, there was still mutual respect there. And, you know, they would grab a drink or something afterwards. You don't have that now. Right now, it's all gotcha politics. You have, people who are just trying to tear each other down. And, you know, because of that, you know, these type of people look for any issue that will get their name out in the paper, kind of get their, you know, face in, you know, the 100%. News, and it's not actually, you know, helpful. What we need is politicians who are going to be very policy focused and do the like boring work that doesn't get them in front of the cameras, but will actually make a long and positive impact for people.
Brings people together, right? Instead of tearing people apart. Sure. Like
we need to make policy exciting again. I think this,
that is literally a
that's like an oxymoron.
I was gonna say let's make policy sexy again, but
also not possible.
I think it's very exciting, but I know I'm in the minority when it comes to that. But this is what gets people going, right? Like you send out a divisive post on social media now, and then it gets hundreds and thousands of likes and hundreds and thousands of eyeballs, and for some reason people start believing that that's your vote. I mean, that is your voter base, but that's going to turn into the people who will come to the ballots and vote for mm-hmm. you. And social media, and honestly, politics is not being played on social media, and it's not new, mm-hmm. but I think it's intensified, mm-hmm. and that kind of contributes to why it's so divisive, in my opinion.
I agree with, and I know, Craig, we got to move on, but I agree with Matt 150% on what you just said. I live it. And you talk about how divisive politics has become. I see it on the Hill. I tell a story. I won't name the politician, but I was in the elevator, and this individual is quite well known in Canadian circles. And she asked me, you know, who do you work for? And I said, oh, this was in right after the election. And oh, I work for, you know, the member of Parliament, London North Centre, Peter Fragascatos. Oh, is he a Liberal? Yeah. Conversation stopped. She turned the other way and just started talking to her staff. And I have numerous stories like that on the Hill about how some people won't interact, where my boss, for example, will talk to anyone and everyone if it means about actually getting stuff done and moving stuff forward and creating a positive relationship. But that used to be the norm. It's now the exception. It is very, very, politics is very, very divisive, and it's at all levels. And frankly, too, it's keeping a lot of good people out of politics because they're like, why is it worth it? Why?
That is something I wanted to get to before we stop this conversation. But first, I want to say this. This campaign that we're talking about, if Michael Van Hulst is in fact running for mayor, and when I spoke to him on the phone today, he said he had a decision to make. The website says what it says. You, good listener, can figure out what's going on. This is going to be a well-funded campaign. there's going to be donations coming in for this campaign from all over the province. There will be money. Now, money does not equal votes. I think we know that. But money opens the door for the possibility of votes. And look, I don't know what's going to happen. I'm not going to sit here and tell you what's going to happen. But this will be a well-funded, visible, high-profile campaign.
But look at how well Michael Chang did a couple elections ago.
Paul Chang.
Paul Chang, sorry. And, you know, he was well-funded, mostly came from himself. Sometimes he donated too much of his own money to himself. But, you know, he came in second against Matt Brown. And here was someone who hadn't even gone to a city council meeting in his entire life. And he comes second for mayor because he was well-funded and he was an anti-establishment candidate. And there is a lot of people who want fresh faces, who don't like, you know, career politicians or people who have, you know, a record. The problem when you're on, you know, whether it's a school board or city council or anything, every decision you make, there will be people who agree with it and people who don't. And the longer you're in politics, the more people will think you're, you know, you've made a wrong decision in your career. So it just, you know, there is a scenario, I think, where Michael Van Hulst, between the anti-vaccine people, but also the anti-establishment people, if he's well-funded, he could definitely give Josh Morgan a run for his money.
I agree.
No pun intended there.
I did see Paul Chang at the grocery store a few weeks ago. He asked me about my kids. We had a nice conversation. Shout out, Paul Chang. seriously, that's a real thing that happened. Yeah, we were talking. Yeah, he asked me about what it's like working here. I want to get to a point that Ryan said a second ago, which is that's why we're seeing fewer people run for office. And I tweeted this, and I talked about this with Matt before we got on the air, before Ryan and Shobit had arrived, but I'll ask both of you about it now. 10 of the 14 wards have one or zero candidates right now in the city of London. 10 of the 14. Mm-hmm. That is, like, no, people are not rushing to file to be a candidate in this election. Put it that way. And I thought, and I was talking about this with Matt as well, after the provincial election, we'd see a bunch of names pop up all of a sudden. That is not what's happened. We're a week out from that provincial election. So why is that the case, do you guys think?
For me personally, it's just back to what I said before. It's become such a toxic place, politics in general. People always ask me, you know, I've worked in politics now for almost 7 years, and I always say I didn't come to work for the job. I came to work for the person. You know, some people get into politics to be somebody. Other people get into politics to do something. My boss got into politics to do something. He's someone I believed in, so I came to work for him, not in politics. But I was talking to someone the other day, and they thought it was really funny, but it wasn't a joke. I said that working in politics is like, it's like every year, it's like dog years. So like I've worked for 7 years, but it felt like I've been doing it for like 20, 21, 25 years, right? Yeah. It is, and I'm not, and my name's not on the door, right? But like, you know, it's to a point now where common decency is almost gone out the window. The staff, we talk about how we used to have a belligerent constituent, you know, the odd time once a week. Now, when someone says thank you or this common polite, it is the exception to the rule. Like, and I'm not exaggerating. Like, it's got to a point where throughout the pandemic, I had to force staff to take holidays just for their own mental health, right? Because and so people look at that and they look at what Matt talked about earlier about gotcha politics and like throwing, and Shobit talked about throwing it up on social media and getting the most likes and that. People are like, you know, why do I want to do that to my family, right? Like, why do they might have thick skin, but you know, like I can tell you that if my mom was reading that about me, she'd be like devastated, right? And I'd be like, and, you know, mom, it's politics, don't worry. But it for family, it's hard to read, right? And if your kids start reading that, and a lot of people have good, well-paying jobs that they'd be leaving because they believe in public service. Mm-hmm. But when the public service, you're just being criticized at every single turn. And then you're being insulted personally. And then I'm not exaggerating. Then there's threats to you, your personal safety, you know, look over your shoulder. The things, I'm not even going to repeat some of the things that have been said, you know, into our office, into other members that we talk to and we obviously, you know, trade stories with. But it's at all levels of government. People say, you know, forget that. Like, I'm gonna enjoy my weekends. I'm going to, you know, be like, not have to be on call 24/7. And I'm not going to, why do I want to be yelled at? I'll just do, you know, I'll make my donations to charities. I'll sit on boards and commissions and I'll do my good deed. And then frankly, you know, then I can go home and put my head in the pillow and not worry about what someone's going to say about me on Twitter at 2 a.m. and start attacking me.
And agreeing with you, Ryan, we've always talked about, or at least for the past few years, we've been talking about making municipal politics, especially in London, more diverse, bringing in more women who are going to put up their names on the ballot. Well, why would anybody do that when you know that it's not a safe space for you? I think we're kind of going backwards instead of making politics more accessible and safer for more women, female identifying mm-hmm. politicians to come forward and put their names forward. We're kind of discouraging people of diverse backgrounds, people who have genuinely not had a seat at the table to again be like you're not welcome here. And it's scary. It's a scary place.
And we're doing this to ourselves. I always, you know, I draw the parallel with you know, bullying in schools. You know, obviously I dealt with it a lot when I was on the school board. And you know, people would often say, well, there was always been bullying, you know, kids have always been bullied. Why is it now that you have people who, you know, aren't able to adapt and, you know, you have the increase in teen suicides and things like that. And the truth is now, because of social media, people cannot get away from it. I worked for a MPP about 17 years ago. Back then, you know, if you wanted to let the MPP know, you had to write a letter. You had to go to mm-hmm. them. You couldn't just, you know, do a tweet with no accountability or no recourse like you can now. So, mm-hmm. right, like the problem is these politicians, they're constantly being attacked. They can't get away from it. And people are a lot less friendly and a lot less polite when they can just do it anonymously on a keyboard mm-hmm. Than having to do it in front of your face and actually tell you, you know, where they think you should go.
It's not so. Even anonymous in certain cases. It's just that people don't associate your name on a Twitter handle to being a real human behind the computer mm-hmm. or the phone reading those messages.
Think about Ryan's point. Would you want someone's mom to be reading mm-hmm. that? In my case, if my mom read Craig Needles is a big stupid jerk on the internet, she'd call me and say, do you think that was your brother or one of your sisters? I have to tell her no, Mom. There are people other than them that think I'm a big stupid jerk. We'll move on here. But before we do, I do want to remind you that the Craig Needles podcast is brought to you by our friends over at Lexus of London, lifestyle with a drive. Your new Lexus is patiently waiting for you at the award-winning Lexus of London, 1065 Warrencliffe Road South, and online at lexusoflondon.com. Let's talk provincial politics a little bit. Two parties looking for leaders. We talked about it a little bit last week. The dust has settled a little bit since then. What should the provincial New Democrats and provincial Liberals be looking for in a leader?
Oof. That's a question. Someone that's really, really, really dynamic. Someone that can raise money. And someone that can attract candidates. And they both need a unicorn. I don't know who's out there that's going to have to put in that much work, Craig. Like it is a gargantuan task to rebuild, especially for the Liberals. Like especially for the Liberals, it's obviously you know where my biases are there. But I think that it's going to be really, really, really hard. But my biggest advice, not that they really care what I think, but I would take your time. Like I think rushing in to try to get someone to declare is a big mistake. I think that, you know, let's start talking about ideas. Let's just kind of like look for the soul of the party and finally identify like what is the difference between the OLP and the Ontario NDP?
Because and the I would PCPO. Say,
I would say that those platforms are like they're crossing over quite a bit, right? Mm. So I think they really have to find like where they're going to be. My personal opinion is, and like I was a big supporter of Stephen Del Duca when he ran for leader myself. I knew he wasn't the most captivating. I knew he wasn't like, he obviously wasn't Mr. Charisma, but he was one of the hardest workers I ever seen. Like I remember one day that guy, he started in Ottawa, was knocking on doors. He went and knocked on three doors in the GTA. He was here in the federal election knocking on doors with Peter. And then he was down in Windsor later that night. Like the guy was a machine, but he also talked about in his leadership about moving the party more to the center, which appeals to me. Like I'm a traditional, I'm a Craig Chen liberal. I'm center right on some issues, left on some social issues, but I'm a center liberal. But the party, it didn't seem that the party could know where it was going. Like, are we going to the center? Are we going right? Are we going left? What are we going to do? Are we going to try to outflank the NDP and steal their vote base? I think they really need to find out what they are first. And then once they decide that, once they like talk about policy, as Shobhita talks about, which I'll fall asleep, but like some people love it, and they kind of set the course, then they know what type of leader that they're looking for, and they can kind of hang the shingle, so to speak.
But it was the lack of policy, like... The challenge with the Liberal Party of both Canada and Ontario is because it kind of borders the center of the spectrum, depending on who the leader is, it can have a huge dynamic, dramatic impact on where the party, swings. And you had, Dalton McGuinty was definitely more right of center, and then you had Kathleen Wynne, who was more left of center. The challenge they have is if they don't, you talk about finding the soul of the party. The party doesn't have a soul. It kind of, adapts to whoever's in charge. And oftentimes, depending on the leader and what their priorities are, that's what dictates it. And in this case, and I did not support, Stephen Del Duca, mm-hmm. I found he was just sort of like another recycled politician, who had been around and had a lot of baggage, which kept being brought up. But when you looked at their platform, I was like, what on earth, like, is new and differentiating you from, the other parties, right? And they recycled the whole buck a beer, tagline to a buck a ride for public transit. And that was about the most exciting thing they even proposed. And, so it's really no one but the party's fault for having a really, boring platform that didn't appeal to the vast majority. And they
and the NDP had that boring platform too. Oh. They just had more incumbents.
But I would argue.
And got about the same amount of votes.
I sort of agree and I sort of disagree, and I'll let you jump. Mm-hmm. Sorry, Shobha, I might have interrupted there. But I don't completely agree that it was solely because of the platform that it was that boring. Frankly, what it boiled down to for the Liberals, they had no money. Like I saw maybe like three ads I can count. They were on their back foot the whole time. And I know, Craig, you've talked about this a lot on social media and on your podcast, but they also didn't go after all the failings that Doug Ford had, especially in the first couple years before COVID hit. There was a laundry list that could fill this room, but they didn't do it. And I think that their branding was awful. They weren't out there enough. They didn't, like or dislike Del Duca, they didn't define what he was or who he was, frankly, so people couldn't resonate with him. And then they didn't remind people, oh, by the way, remember all these terrible things that Doug Ford did and all these cuts he made and how much he bungled the autism file and how absolutely. How he cut this and slashed that and burned that and put us on our back foot in our healthcare settings. No, well, they didn't talk about that. They're like, well, here's what we're going to do. And some will say, well, Del Duca tried to do that in his daily press conference. Who watches those daily press conferences? Yeah. It's all about radio. It's all about television ads. It's all about how you're getting into people's social media nowadays. And I think they, frankly, did not do a good job there. But I will say, Matt, that your point about like how the party adapts to the leader, maybe that's the problem. It's like, let's maybe like look at that. Like, that's why I'm saying maybe we should search it and create a soul then for the OLP, right? Because I'm going to say federally, if you look at it, Pierre Poilievre and the Conservative, I don't know what the Conservatives are doing. They're going so far right that it just, the Liberals don't have to keep trying to outflank the NDP federally. We can move into the center. And really, there's a lot of, I've talked to a lot of people who, know I'm in federal politics, and they say, I feel like I'm homeless as kind of that center right person. The CPC has gone off into some like la la land, and then the Liberals are moving a little bit too far left for my liking. So I think that we need to adjust and go right into the center federally. But we also have a luxury because we've been in government, we have more seats, we have money, we have fundraising apparatuses. The OLP is decimated. So who's ever going in is,
you know what else you have that they don't, and like, I know this is getting back to the start, the root of the conversation. You have Justin Trudeau. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they don't, and like in some corners, Justin Trudeau is a dirty word. But for most Canadians, especially in the places where you need to go win elections, they're okay with Justin Trudeau.
Well, you heard Lisa Raitt talking about that, like where she's just like, if Pierre Poilievre wins, we need Justin Trudeau to contrast him. Whether you agree or disagree with him, like him or not like him, if Pierre is going to keep going with the messaging that he's going on, which I think the jury's still out on that, because a lot of times people kind of They start talking about the modern race, once they win. Yeah. But you know, Pierre is kind of all shock and awe, always has been. So I think we do need him now. If someone else wins, if Jean Charest wins, I'm going to be honest with you. Jean Charest scares me. He terrifies me as a liberal. Like, he is one
could
of the
he not deliver the same seats that Doug Ford just delivered for the
yes,
progressive conservatives?
Yes, he can. Yes,
like,
he
like,
can.
Like, and you know what? Signed up like 300,000 people. Just
that's true. Way. That's well, now. That's what he said.
But where? That's what he right? said. Where did he sign them up? We know it's a point yeah. system, right?
Exactly.
But anyways, I know we're getting off topic.
Oh,
but
no, it's okay. That's what I like. That it's we're exploring the topic.
What I was saying was, let's look at it another way, right? The PCs, they stuck to their playbook.
Yeah.
They stuck to their playbook, whereas both the Liberals and the NDP became reactionary, especially towards the end mm-hmm. of the campaign. I think that's where the problem happened, and I think that's what you were talking about having that central figure, that brand, that theme. Those
for the PCs, that was Ford. Andrew Scheer, yeah. and this is people forget this. Yeah. Andrew Scheer in 2019 said to Doug Ford, "You stay away. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We don't want to see you. Mm-hmm. We don't want to hear you.
How the tables
we
turned.
Think that you are a liability." Yeah. That decision for Andrew Scheer has aged poorly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because Doug Ford was not a liability.
Well, he was back then.
He made, yeah, well, fair
so
enough.
So back then.
More so now. More so than now.
That's
yeah,
what
absolutely.
He was talking about. You know, we need to fire public servants yeah. To try and bring the budget under. He cut autism funding. So you had mm-hmm. these families who, you know, are already struggling and couldn't even get, like, basic services. You had he was looking to merge all of the public health units, you know, in Ontario.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Ironic that they were looking at this and actively looking at this, you know, coming up with a plan that
this
would
was
have
like
had,
January of 2020.
And,
this is happening.
And a month or two yeah. later, COVID hits, and yeah. then everything, you know, then they're silent. But the concern is, what, you know, what does Doug Ford do? Does he, you know, in the next 4 years, does he go back, you know, after COVID? Go back to his old playbook, or has he learned that he needs to govern in the center, which is what he's been doing the last 2 years, which is why the Liberals were, you know, swinging to the left, trying to, you know, capture any votes they could. But, you know, does Ford go to, you know, his roots that he was showing before COVID, or does he continue to play this middle of the road where he, you know, does a lot of press conferences, opening up, building new schools and spending money on construction and doing all of these things to build up the province, you know, eventually he's going to have to figure out how to pay it all. And mm-hmm. if you keep spending $1 billion giving people, you know, their license plate sticker money back, like eventually you can't pay for everything. So mm-hmm. how is this going to happen?
And I think as the official opposition and as and the fact that London has three members London has three members
who are new Democrats
and who are the official opposition now, they need to hold the government's feet to the fire now to say, is this, to Matt's point, like, which way are we going? Are we reverting to what January 2020 looked like, those points were exactly what I thought were going to be in that televised debate, but I didn't hear any of those.
Yeah. Yeah,
and that was disappointing.
The problem with the Ontario NDP that they're going to have when figuring out a leader is that Andrea Horvath was someone who had been there for over a decade, multiple elections. She was a very solid performer, knew, you know, her stuff, like, you know, was... like had some really good points and really good ideas, but she was never able in the last election when the Liberal Party imploded and everyone blamed Wynne. She was not able to get more than you know, official party status, and she was able to hold on to it even though she got around the same number of votes as the Liberals, but just the distribution. So they need to find someone who has that gravitas, like a Jack Layton, right? The type of person who gets people excited and gets people actually wanting to go out and vote. And if they can find that, you know, they could do very well, but they've really missed their opportunities. Like 4 years ago, that was their moment to shine. You know, the Liberals are imploding. Everyone hated Kathleen Wynne. And, the NDP was not able to have that orange crush that they did federally about a decade
ago. Here's what I'll say about the Layton thing, though, and this is the trouble with it. If I bought an NHL team tomorrow, I would say, you know what I need is someone like Connor McDavid. Mm-hmm. And there aren't a lot of those.
Yeah.
You know, there's just, you know what I mean? That is not something that is in healthy supply.
Well, no, and that's exactly right. You know, it's kind of like catching lightning in a bottle, right? Like when you get really good federal leaders that can, you know, create a Trudeau mania or, you know, Jack Layton. Remember, Jack Layton took time to catch
took him
that.
Like three
it, it's exactly yeah. like where everyone kind of wrote him off. People finally looked at him and said, you know what, this guy, he's got something, you know, it's interesting. And, you know, you can just look at, you know, you can talk to Glenn Pearson about what happened in 2011, right? When the NDP started to pull massive amounts of support away from the federal Liberals, and then conservatives were popping up through the middle, like Susan mm-hmm. Troupe did when she won that riding. London North Centre is not a conservative riding, has conservative undertones, but you tweeted out, you get your base 30% in North Centre, and that's about it.
And that's all she needed to win that year.
Well, no,
if everyone else is 28, 30% is real good.
But see, that's all they needed because, again, the Liberals and the NDP were pulling themselves apart. And this is why I keep coming back to the fact about provincially, like the OLP needs to find out who they are. And I think that as a party, they need to decide this is what we want to be and this is what's important to us. Because, again, to Matt's point, if the party then starts to swing with the leader as they come in, what if the party membership doesn't want to swing with the leader, right? And then the leader is fighting the party membership. You know, you're not getting people you're not getting people donating.
Parties, yeah,
absolutely.
They have policy conferences. They, you know, say this is the official stance of whatever on such and such a topic. And then the leader just says, yeah, that's great. We're not doing it. And this is our platform. And we expect all of you people who spent hours, you know, in these policy conferences, which sound, you know, they're more exciting than they sound, but, you know, not really.
Not really.
They're about as exactly.
They're about exactly as they sound.
You know, the party wants something. You go and do, you know, something completely different. And then you're asking those same members to go out and knock on doors and put up signs for you. It's like, how... you know, do you motivate people? How does, you know, I, as, you know, some, you know, citizen in London, Ontario, feel like I actually have a say in what's happening, you know, within my party? And they keep losing the base and taking it them for granted, quite honestly. They think they're always going to show up. And I don't know if you, like, I'm just going to say the elections I've seen in the last bit, they are starving for volunteers. There are not people who are out there banging in, you know, signs and knocking on doors like there used to be. And part of it is people are busy and, you know,
life has changed.
But man, like the people, we can't take volunteers for granted anymore.
You are 100% accurate. And I can tell you that I have, believe it or not, I have conservative friends and I have NDP friends, and we talk about different campaigns. Everyone is experiencing the volunteer drain. There's a few anomalies, you know, in the GTA, but for the most part, people don't have volunteers, and it's really a dying breed, that the ones that want to canvass all the time and that want to put signs in the ground. But, you know, you talk about, you know, well-run campaigns. The best campaign in the last provincial election here recently in London was Kate Graham's campaign. It was fantastic, outward facing. It looked amazing. It was slick. It was I've seen a lot of campaigns in my time, and it was a well done campaign. She finished third. Because to your point, Matt, like I think that if the base is not energized, if they don't feel a part of it, it doesn't matter how good the campaign is. To an extent, it doesn't matter how good the candidate is. If they feel as though that they're not motivated to go out and vote, they stay home. And Liberals are the worst for that. They need to be motivated. The Conservatives will vote through a tornado if they need to. Liberals, the number one problem we always have is voter apathy and getting out the vote. That's why our systems have become so good to get out that vote. But the provincial election, I don't know about you guys in this room, it didn't feel like an election to me. It didn't have that buzz in the air. It didn't have that election feel, the happiness,
there was no
the anxiety.
Debates, right?
No.
The issues in the past were things like, you know, John Tory was bringing forward the faith-based funding. So there could have been like a whole new educational revolution happening.
Yeah.
You know, you had, you know, hospitals that were being proposed, or green energy initiatives and the Green Belt and things like that. And actual like innovative ideas and things that got people talking. And, you know, people are afraid to come out because ultimately John Tory's idea of the faith-based funding for
it cost him the campaign.
So like no one ever wants to talk about
Hudak cutting the public service. Sort of thing. Cost him the campaign.
And so you're trying to find something that will motivate people without completely shooting yourself in the foot and costing you the election. But the only thing that actually motivates and people gets people talking is an innovative idea or saying, hey, like, should we have public funded Jewish and Muslim schools? That was something that in essence, it was a good idea. Unfortunately, the debate really needs to go the other way. It's like, why are we supporting one, faith, Catholic schools and not kind of recognizing we need to support the rest?
I'm a Catholic. We've talked about this on this podcast. I have children in Catholic schools and I ask myself that question, right? Mm-hmm. Don't get me wrong. I'm happy. It's there. It's free. I like the, the faith-based aspect of it, but it's a question that I can't, when you say, why do we have this today? I don't really have a good answer for you. It's just the way it's been. And if you change it tomorrow, I wouldn't be heartbroken.
But it's a political poison pill.
You're right.
Don't want to touch it.
It's the third rail. Yeah. It is the third rail.
Until they actually start talking about looking at innovative, ideas or starting to say what we need to start doing, what's right, not what's politically easy. You're going to have people who just continue to have recycled ideas. And the biggest issue they're talking about is whether it should be a 10 or a 20% increase for ODSP, rates in this election. That's one issue. It affects a lot of people. But, debating whether or not the number is 10 or 20% is not really going to motivate people to get out there and vote. Especially the people who are voting who it doesn't affect. So they need to start looking at, the policy and the platforms and getting what actually matters to people. And they've been losing that.
And build from there, Matt. And then look at saying. Yeah. Then look at the leader. Nathaniel Erskine Smith, for example. Yeah. You guys may know the MP. Yep. He's in the Liberal Caucus federally. Beaches East York, I think.
Yep.
Is rumored that to be coming out any day. It could be happening while we're recording.
I think he's publicly acknowledged that he's considering it.
He has. My big problem with that is I like Nathaniel a lot. Met him a few times. Great guy, hard worker, good family man, good member of parliament. But man, we talked about that. He's going to cloud with the NDP and that kind of mix of what are we? Are we liberals or are we NDPers? And I think that before that they start going their leadership race, they need to be looking at where is the soul of the party? Let's put the stake in the ground and then leaders there come out.
And I wonder if
it won't happen, but that's what I think.
I wonder if it's a 4-year thing or longer because are we expecting the liberals to rebuilds in 4 years for the next election? Probably not going to happen,
right?
because the base that
unless they get a Trudeau. Remember 2015?
It was more than a 4-year job.
We went third from third, which no one thought. Halfway through the election, Tom Mulcair was going to be prime minister. Mm-hmm. We went from third to a majority government, right? So it is there,
so
but you need
hair
to catch lightning. Sorry,
someone with good hair.
Good hair.
I wonder too, because there's a very real scenario, and we got to wrap up here because we're up against the clock. The Liberal parties provincially in Alberta and Saskatchewan and Manitoba are essentially non-entities. Mm-hmm. That scenario exists here.
But even the Liberal Party in Quebec is actually more like the Conservative Party.
Right.
Same in BC. Yeah.
So, it's interesting because when you join the Ontario NDP, you're automatically made a member of the federal NDP, and they have a much more stronger kind of connection between those provincial wings of the party, if you will. But in Ontario, they're completely separate entities, different people. They often hire from each other once one of them loses and, there's employment opportunities. But, this whole idea, there's also been talk of, should the Ontario NDP and the Ontario Liberals merge? They're very different. The people who are involved in it would have none of it. They have no desire to do it. There are different visions. And, I don't think going to a two-party system like the U.S. is ever going to be, make people motivated and feel good.
And this is what I'll say, the last word on the merging subject. Ask provincial Liberals and provincial New Democrats for things that they agree on and say that you're not allowed to mention Doug Ford in this sentence and see how long the conversation lasts, because it may not last very long. may not last very long. We've got to wrap up. So thank you very much to Matt and to Shobit and to Ryan for doing the Craig Needles Podcast Friday Roundtable with us today. And thanks very much to our friends over at Lexus of London. Lifestyle with the drive. Your new Lexus is patiently waiting at Lexus of London, 1065 Warncliffe Road South, and online at lexusoflondon.com. The Craig Needles Podcast available, of course, on your favorite podcast app and at classicrock981.com and londonnewstoday.ca.
The Craig Needles Podcast is a presentation of the Blackburn Media Podcast Network.